Hey everyone, thanks for joining me today. So last month, the Supreme Court ended its term with a flurry of decisions. And one of those decisions was Loper Bright Enterprises versus Raimondo, in which it overturned an early decision that's commonly known as Chevron. So today I just want to touch base on Loper Bright. But before I get started, I just want to say that this vlog is not intended to provide legal advice or to provide an in-depth legal analysis of Loper Bright and Chevron. I mean, there are countless law review articles and treatises that address Chevron, and we could spend hours on the going into the nitty-gritty of the Supreme Court's opinion in Loper Bright. So this video blog is really just intended to give government contractors a quick and basic understanding of the Loper Bright decision and why that decision may someday matter to them. So before we talk about Loper Bright, let's just talk for a few minutes about Chevron. Now, as we know, federal law covers a wide variety of complex issues, tax issues, energy, telecommunications, environment, and government contracting. And we also know that federal statutes are often ambiguous and unclear. Very rarely are they written in plain, easily understandable English. And sometimes those ambiguities are intentional. The language that ends up in a statute may be the result of a lot of negotiating. So the compromise language that finds its way into a statute may be vague for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is that the fuzzy language may be a way to kick the can down the road on some underlying thorny issues. But getting back to Chevron, the major ruling or holding in Chevron had to do with how much deference federal courts should give to a government agency's interpretation of an ambiguous federal statute. Now, the main issue in Chevron was about a specific term that was used in the Clean Air Act. Now, that term was not defined by the statute, so the EPA adopted regulations that interpreted the term and then filled in a definition. But after a change in the administration, the EPA adopted a definition that was, in a sense, more business-friendly. The EPA's definition allowed businesses, for purposes of determining pollution emissions, to group polluting emitting devices together instead of treating them individually. And that had the effect of allowing more polluting devices to be offset by less polluting devices. And a Court of Appeals decision said no. That definition kind of defeats the purpose of the Clean Air Act, which is to reduce overall emissions and not to create some kind of net zero outcome. Well, the Supreme Court in Chevron reversed that Court of Appeals decision. The Supreme Court basically said that when Congress passes a law that is silent or ambiguous on an issue, then the federal agency that administers that law should be given deference in interpreting that law. And as long as that interpretation is reasonable, then it should be upheld. So under Chevron, it was not appropriate for courts to try to determine on their own what the best interpretation of an ambiguous statute is. Their task was just to make sure that the agency's interpretation was reasonably plausible. Now, fast forward 40 years later, almost to the day, and in Loper Bright, the Supreme Court struck down Chevron. And said, no, in those instances in which a law that's passed by Congress is silent or ambiguous, if Congress hasn't specifically delegated the interpretive authority to an agency, well, it's within a court's traditional role to independently figure out for itself what a law or statute means, and it doesn't have to defer to an agency interpretation. So after Loper Bright, a court can decide for itself if an agency's interpretation is the best interpretation of an ambiguous statute. Now, before we move on, what often gets lost in the discussion of Loper Bright and Chevron is that in Chevron, it was the government agency and its regulations that were, from a business or regulated party standpoint, taking a less restrictive approach to a federal law. And it was the Court of Appeals interpretation that was more restrictive. So all of this is to say that in a post-Chevron or in the Loper Bright world that we're now in, some outcomes may be more restrictive or more onerous depending on the district court and the appellate court that's interpreting the ambiguous law. So a few more points on impacts. Now, when it comes to federal law, Loper-Bright was kind of like a seismic event. It disrupted what had been, for 40 years, settled ground on how courts are supposed to treat a government agency's interpretations of ambiguous federal law. And now that dust has started to settle, we're starting to see some commentary about Loper-Bright with some predictions. But at this early standpoint, I think it's not very clear what the long-term or short-term impacts are going to be. Was Loper-Bright like a 5.0 earthquake? Was it a 7.0 event? I think at this point, we don't really know for sure. Now, what does seem clear is that the impacts of Loper-Bright are going to become more and more apparent with every aftershock that's now going to follow in the form of district and appellate court decisions that are going to have to grapple with what to do now that Chevron has been dismantled. And I think inevitably we're going to see more litigation challenging SBA and FAR and DFARS and other federal procurement regulations. Whereas before it might have been taken for granted that the regulations themselves were valid, and fights may have been largely over whether a contractor satisfied the particular requirements under the regulations, I think we're going to see more suits challenging the validity of the regulations to begin with. So some arguments may be, hey, that NDAA or small business legislation is silent or unclear, and there isn't really an express delegation to the agency. So, hey, courts, you decide whether this SBA or FAR regulation is a reasonable interpretation or reasonably fills in the gap where Congress has been silent. And to see how this might play out, let's just take the proposed CMMC regulations as one example. So for a good part of its history, CMMC has been kind of like the tail wagging the dog, with DOD rolling out the program first and then the statutory authority and the regulations coming later. Now, with regard to the proposed regulations that were issued last December that laid out DOD's cybersecurity certification program, some may argue, well, there really isn't any ambiguity. Congress eventually did provide explicit authority to DOD to implement the program in NDAA 2020. And in NDAA 2020, it gave DOD authority to develop a cybersecurity assessment framework that includes third-party certification. So where's the ambiguity? Well, a counter-argument may be, well, sure, okay, sure. Assuming that the authority or delegation is not in question, what about third-party certifications? That wasn't defined, and NDAA 2020 doesn't say anything about DOD having exclusive authority to define that term. So after Loper-Bright, can a contractor just say, hey court, third-party certifications, what does that reasonably mean to you? Is that a third-party certification that I've got to foot the bill for, reasonably? Now, I'm not saying that these are strong or weak arguments either way, but under Loper-Bright, you might start to see these types of challenges to agency regulations. Now, the last point I want to make is about small business contractors. Now, as we know, small business contractors are like that steady, small four or six cylinder Honda or Toyota engine that drives the economy. According to some studies, they account for about 2/3 of all new jobs. So should small businesses be happy about Loper-Bright? And maybe, maybe not. I'm not so sure. Again, from a bird's eye perspective, some may take the position that Loper-Bright makes the federal judiciary the ultimate arbiter when federal statutes are not clear. So when a small business has a problem with how a law is being interpreted by an agency, or even how it's being interpreted by a federal court, can it just call the federal judiciary hotline and say, hey, that interpretation is going to cost me tens of thousands of dollars, or now puts me at a competitive disadvantage? Or can it write a letter or submit a public comment to a local district court and say, hey, we have a problem with your interpretation of X, Y, or Z. Is there a local district court small business office where a small business owner can kind of stop in and address its concerns? No, there isn't. So what are the options? Well, if the buck stops with the federal courts, there's litigation. file a lawsuit, contest an agency interpretation, hope to get a district ruling that's kind of in line with how the small business believes the law should be interpreted. But if a district court comes out the other way, file an appeal. Now, if federal courts are the ultimate decider on ambiguous federal statutes, well, Mr. Small Businessman or Ms. SBIR Technology Company that's living off a shoestring budget, what was your federal and appellate litigation budget last year? And what's it going to be next year? Now, of course, another option is to kind of nip things in the bud at the outset and try to avoid ambiguity altogether by getting Congress to write clearer laws or to pass clarifying amendments to federal statutes. And again, Mr. Small Businessman or Ms. SBIR Technology Company, what was your lobbying budget last year? And what's it going to be next year? So should small businesses be super excited that Chevron has been overturned? I'm not so sure. Now, one could argue that it may now dilute the main cost-effective way that small businesses can impact regulations that apply to it, which is through the submission of public comments during the rulemaking process. Now, again, at this point, I think it's entirely unclear how Loper-Bright is going to play out. But I think something that small businesses can do, and it's something they probably should be doing already, is building collective leverage by joining local small business organizations or trade groups that have an emphasis on strong small business advocacy. Well, that's all I have for today. Thanks for joining me, and look out for our next GovCon video blog.